What's happening, guys? Happy Friday, and thank you for joining another special episode of Your Welcome.
I have been hacked.
I have been hacked are the words of most every fool who put something out on social media and didn't want to have to own it. So, it's not my first time, though. And when I get hacked, it's Twitter. I've never been hacked through a different platform or, like, you know, something that you really wouldn't want, like a bank account, something along these lines, PayPal. So, first time I get hacked, or at least the last time I got hacked, I began selling PlayStation 5s. But apparently, either PlayStation 5s were completely sold out at that time and you just couldn't get a hold of them, or they hadn't been sold yet. They were waiting, just the news, the reports are coming in. Drop it on March 1st type deal, and I can get it 2 months ahead of time. It's something like this. So then, if I go into the DMs, that's where the exchange for QR codes and Bitcoin, and that's where all this happens. Publicly, it's just, I've got these things, hit me up. All right. Well, there, I sold a lot of PlayStation 5s. And so when I get my codes back, I don't know that part has happened. I don't know that part has happened because that part is happening through the DM portion of Twitter. I had no ability to see this. And once Twitter can see that you have been hacked, once you can get to the right person, convince them, get a level of their focus and or interest, do a background check, prove who you are, like in a best case scenario, you're still waiting 2 days. In a best case scenario. So I finally get it back, going to the DMs, and that's where I'm seeing this. And those DMs then have other DMs like, hey, Chael, you know, you promised you'd send me the shipping number. Where is that? This is for my daughter's birthday, or this is for some special event, just tugging at my heartstrings. And I got to go back to the person to let them know this is the first we've ever communicated. You have never communicated with me. So I start buying them back. It's all on the backside. No one can see it. I start buying them back. Anyone that said that they lost money or they bought, I'm buying them back, I'm buying them back. My partner Ryan says to me, he goes, Chael, how do you know that's not part of the scam? And I know somewhere along the way, the hacker himself is not one of the people that you're buying these back for. And it's like, of course. So it was just one of those spots. It was one of those spots that was annoying. I mean, more than anything, it was a nuisance. But generally speaking, you wouldn't really have to explain yourself. Your friends are going to look at that. It wasn't your friends that were buying PlayStations from you. It wasn't people that knew you. Generally speaking, they would know right off the bat something's afoot here. So, all right, fast forward. I want to say this happened to me 2 other times, but if I'm wrong, it's 1 other time, and here we are now. I've been hacked. Well, I've been hacked by a friendly hacker. Like, the hacker himself has got a hold of me to let me know that it is him and that if I would like the passwords back, all I need to do is say to him, I would like the passwords back. Now, that seems very simple. Like, it seems simple to the point that I haven't done it. I'm assuming, even if I don't know the scam or how it's done, that when I reply to this message, that is when greater access into my private life begins. So, though it was a friendly enough hack, not demanding Bitcoin, by the way, not demanding anything, not demanding an apology, not demanding I learned my lesson for this, that, and the other. Just let him know and he'll give it back. And this case being a little bit different, that I have had some people reach out to me about tweets that are going out to where an explanation was needed, to where I bothered them. And that part of it was a little unexpected. In my opinion, that part of it was, I don't know where they were in their life, or maybe they got it secondhand. Things are a lot more believable secondhand. Like, if it's somebody you trust and they mention something to you, it's a lot easier as like the pitfalls of human thinking for somebody to go for it. But it's still a tough spot. It's like, hey, even if we get this worked out or not, like the fact that you thought that I would have done that or have said that, like, these hackers are good, man. I'll tell you that these hackers really are very skilled. I don't know what the rush would be. I don't know what the real fun would be.
if you're impersonating somebody on social media and you're only going to get into it for a couple of days and you're going to get shut down, I would understand the Bitcoin. I would understand, right, theft, monetize, value. Like, I would get why they did it. But if there isn't any of that, and the hacker was nice enough to contact me, told me I can have my codes back. Maybe when I get them back, I go into the DMs and I have a little bit different opinion. But for right now, it just seems like a guy that had a skill, wanted to show that he had it, got a power over old JLP, decided to use it. I want to be mad about it. It's definitely an inconvenience. It's also a pretty good skill. I'd like my codes back, but I'd rather he taught me how he did it. Michael Chandler came out talking about he was offered Islam Makhachev. Now, guys, I misinterpreted this. Did you guys see this? This had come out yesterday. When I heard it, though, and I was still in Vegas, I just got back. When I heard that, it was from somebody else. I didn't hear and or read the interview where it was Chandler speaking. I got it from somebody else that had seen and or read the interview where Chandler was speaking. And my interpretation, I had a full conversation with them. They knew what I was thinking. I don't know why they didn't correct me. I was thinking Chandler was just telling old stories. I thought he was just kind of talking about from, you know, along the journey type thing. Well, no, he's talking about right now. And that makes a lot of sense. It does. Now, he hadn't fought in a while, and he's coming off a loss. And that loss was by stoppage. That is all true. But it's not as though it's unprecedented. It's not even unprecedented for its time. In fact, not fighting for a while and coming off a loss and that loss being via stoppage to a completely different opponent. I just described, well, Stipe Miocic, for example. I just described that. So while this isn't what's necessarily done, let's take a look at the landscape. You know, you got some guys at 155 pounds that is iron on top of iron, like really no other division has seen. Right, like just because you lose to Poirier, who then goes out and is very competitive, like right, Charles Oliveira, another great example, just 155 pounds. So you've got Sarukian, who's suspended at least for a minute for punching the fan. And by the way, I met that fan twice actually at UFC Expo. He did not sue. He was actually quite a nice guy. He really was. He was pretty cool. And believe it or not, he was actually still cheering for Sakarian. So, and I'm talking about the night of 300 when the punch got thrown. So either the guy's got something against Charles Oliveira, or, you know, the guy saw that like as a bonding experience. I don't fully know how that happened. I digress. Let's get back to Chandler here. So, you know, offered a title fight. Things are a little bit weird. You have Charles Oliveira, who they wanted to fight for the title. There is somebody with tremendous influence who lives on or near Fight Island that has always wanted Charles Oliveira back in there with Islam, to the point that they are willing to acquiesce to put Charles back in there. Charles does not want in there. But the reason I bring that up, if you're willing to turn to a guy coming off of a loss, then you're willing to turn to anybody. So just go get the fight that you want. Which is what they tried to do, and they just can't. So I'm just sharing for you. And then Poirier just had it. I'm trying to run through the gears right here. Sakarian is clearly the right guy. You want to know an idea I don't hate, guys? And you're not going to meet me here. I know I'm going to be alone. Flame away. Benny. If we're going to go in a direction that we do not generally do, if we're going to go in a direction of, hey, it's a weird time, you're tougher than hell, he appears to be even tougher than that, let's get in there and let's make some TV. Like, if we're doing that, consider Benny. I mean, Chandler doesn't sound like he's wanting to take the fight, but I do understand the fight. And I don't think that damages Chandler. Like, if Chandler goes out and wins a championship, I do believe that McGregor is still a competitor. I think that McGregor would really like that. It's not as though that eliminates McGregor's ability. Not at all. They still do the fight. Now there's just a championship up. And if he doesn't go out there and win, well, he's not coming off a win when he got the McGregor fight. It's very interesting. And ultimately, it is very respectful by Dana White. I mean, above everything else, right? Dana told Michael Chandler, hey, come do these things for me and we'll get you this fight. You know, Red Band and I are still very real guys with our industry. Very big deal for Michael Chandler that he got that opportunity. And when Dana came up a little short, I gave him the Ultimate Fighter. I think that was more of the same time frame, but there was something came along in there where there was a mishap. And so Dana, hey, go over to Monday Night Raw. Have yourself a good time. Give me a minute to figure this thing out. And now, you know, Dana once again, never, or at least not trying, to leave Chandler without, you know, something wonderful. So I like it myself. I do like it. And Michael Chandler with his wrestling ability versus Islam, that's a very interesting match. I'm into that match. I'm not make-believing for you that Chandler's going to be the favorite, but the trash talk has already begun. And Chandler's trash talk, at least today, was truth talk. He said, I don't get taken down against the cage. I don't get taken down in the open. Matter of fact, I don't even get taken down. I watched all his fights. He has been taken down, but I sure can't remember who it was. I mean, I'm just saying, not for nothing. It's an interesting concept. While Sakarian gets turned around, and one other thing is, it would appear by the mere fact that they're even looking for somebody to fill in for a missing, timed out Sakarian, it would appear that they want to turn Islam around quickly. And whether this match happens or not, it appears they want to turn Islam around quickly, which means we knew this was going to happen at some point, but it means the numbers for Islam that simply did not exist have come in. Had a couple of days to digest and look back at the notion of Michael Chandler versus Islam Makhachev right now for a world championship. And I got to stress it like that because when this first came out, Michael Chandler versus Islam Makhachev, or Michael Chandler was offered Islam Makhachev, it appeared like once upon a time or somewhere along the way of Chandler McGregor. And it turns out, no. It's right now. Michael Chandler right now has an offer on the table, apparently, to take on Islam Makhachev. Makhachev has weighed in and didn't say no. He wasn't all for it. He wasn't like backing the idea or saying you're the true number one contender. It was nothing like that. But he still didn't say no. And I maintain for you guys from the beginning that if Conor McGregor and Michael Chandler does not happen on June 29th, not only will it not happen, it's akin to announcing the retirement of McGregor. He will not be back at a future time. Now, that is a prediction. It's a prediction based on evidence, what's known as a hypothesis, but it's nothing more than that. And I do think it is strengthened. Like the mere idea that there is an offer being presented to Michael Chandler, I hope that Michael Chandler understands. All right, guys, there is a language which is used in every single industry. There is something known as an industry standard. There is a vernacular within the industry that if you're in the industry, you will know meets a standard. If Michael Chandler is offered Islam Makhachev, there is a message being delivered to him that he has got to be able to hear. The words, we cannot get you Conor McGregor. We are not going to get you Conor McGregor. We are not going to rebook you and Conor McGregor. Those words are not being used. But there's a number of reasons why they can't. There's a number of legal words in our industry that matter. Canceled versus postponed, just for example. a couple of words that you've had thrown at you over the course of the last month that you've taken for granted. There is an immensely powerful reason from a legal perspective for things that you can say or things that you cannot say, for things that you would put in contract, for things that you are going to have to know a vernacular and a standard of an industry. If Michael Chandler was offered Islam Makhachev, I'm not saying he has to go take the fight. I hope he takes a fight. Michael Chandler matches up very interesting with Islam. Michael Chandler is amongst the sport's most disciplined men. I don't know if he's more disciplined than Islam. It'd be an interesting conversation. But what a sign of respect by the UFC to understand what Chandler's been through, to understand what Chandler did, to understand the willingness and the partner that Chandler was, and then you give a good faith effort to repay that. But a lot of times, particularly within this industry, guys will make a mistake of thinking, if I turn down what's behind door number one, there's always going to be something equal or better behind door number two. And if I turn down door number one and door number two, there's going to be something equal or better behind door number three. That is a mistake. I don't suggest for you that Chandler is foolish enough to not know that. I also don't suggest for you that Michael Chandler is going to turn down a fight or an opportunity at a world title. And I also want to suggest for you that regardless of outcome, win, lose, or draw against Islam, that would have any bearing and or effect over a potential match with Conor McGregor. So it's a very interesting time. And while I'm watching this unfold, and of course this is in the absence of Sakarian, who has been issued his suspension by the Nevada State Athletic Commission, right? Because of all of these things, this perfect storm, if you will, it has created an opportunity not to be unmatched by the fact that no other 55-pounder seems to have a problem with it. Like, I read something that Ilya Topuria says that Max Holloway won't be available, so they're looking for another opponent. Let that go and move down a different road. That would be a fine example. Like, Max, as the BMF champion, to challenge Islam or to speak up or to get in the way of Chandler would just be one of many potential examples. Charles Oliveira, coming off of a loss, same as Chandler, who was in an elimination match with Sakarian, which was razor thin, and somebody somewhere in the world wants to see Charles Oliveira take on Islam. Like, it'd be a really good time for Charles to speak up. And I don't have to go through each and every 55-pounder, but I will tell you, when an idea like that is put out there, and that's door number two. Door number one didn't come through. Here's door number two. To make believe that there's going to be a door number three, don't make that mistake. You got to get the matches you can get when you can get them. You got to win the matches you can win when you can win them. You got to sign the matches you can sign when you can sign them. In front of everything else, get the fight and get it into the ring. I think we're going to see Chandler versus Islam. You bet I do. But I also believe if we sign Chandler versus Islam, you can accept there's a lot of things in this world, a lot of things in this sport that we say, and there's things that we just don't say for reasons that might be more sophisticated than you could understand. But a signed bout agreement of Islam versus Chandler is akin to a retirement announcement of Conor McGregor. When it comes to winning a championship, it's never done alone. Gronk and Brady, Venus and Serena, Jordan and Pippen. And in MMA, we got our training partners that push us to our best. If you want a championship level e-commerce store, you need Shopify.
You gotta have them as your teammate. They're the guys that I use. If you go to badguyinc.com right now and you're thinking, what an amazing place this is. Yeah, thanks guys, but it's all Shopify. It is literally a global commerce platform and it helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real life store stage, all the way to we just did it and hit a million orders stage, Shopify is there to help you grow. Whether you're auctioning autographed apparel or selling custom Bad Guy Ink t-shirts, Shopify will help you sell to everyone. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person point of sale system, wherever and whatever it is you're selling, Shopify has got your back. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, up to 36% better compared to other leading commerce platforms, and sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. No matter how big you grow, you don't have to feel overwhelmed by the demand. Shopify gives you everything that you need to take control and take your business to the next level with ease. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. and millions of other entrepreneurs at every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's extensive help resources are there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/chale, all lowercase. Just go to shopify.com/chail. Do it now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/chail. I recently started taking Morning Kick, used and created by former karate champion Chuck Norris. Guys, I've never felt better. By the way, have you seen Chuck lately? It's like he's aging backwards. This guy is still throwing kicks. He's full of energy. And he's in his 80s. This is why I jumped at the shot of taking his revolutionary new daily drink from Roundhouse Provisions. This drink combines ultra-potent greens like spirulina and kale with probiotics, prebiotics, collagen, and even ashwagandha. Just mix with water, stir, and enjoy. Unlike other greens out there, this one tastes exactly like strawberry lemonade, and it has hundreds of five-star reviews. And by the way, I never tell you something tastes a certain way if it doesn't. It tastes just like strawberry lemonade. Since I started drinking Morning Kick, my digestion is smoother. My body looks leaner. I have energy all day. I just feel sharp. I want you to go to roundhouseprovisions.com/chale. Now, that's gonna save you up to 44% off the regular priced order. Plus, every purchase is backed by a 90-day money-back guarantee. So if you want to experience smoother digestion, a boost in energy, and just an overall healthier body, go to roundhouseprovisions.com/chale today.
Yuri Prohaska already talking to the fans, already doing some weird Yuri stuff, and I don't know, man, being a baby, I don't know. It's one of these things. I turned this camera on. I wanted to make a nice piece about Yuri. I haven't met him, but I appreciate him. And I recognize pretty incredible grit to that guy. I mean, a real tough guy. You want to beat Yuri Prohaska? Well, you better do what Pehera did. You better knock him out. He is not going to give up. And it's really not as simple as that might sound. There's not a bigger compliment that you really, one fighter could give to another. The whole sport is presented to you, the fan in the audience, is, you know, the punches and the kicks and the grappling, but that's just how we present it to you. That is a battle of wills and there's nothing more. I am tougher than you or I'm not. I'm gonna use the punches and kicks to change your mind to whatever you walked in here with. I'm gonna change your mind and convince you it's me. But that's all we're doing. And Yuri Prohaska, I've never seen him do it. I've never seen him do anything where he gets talked out of being determined, where he gets talked out of being willing to walk through fire if that's what it takes for victory. And he says he's got to either evolve or he's got to quit. And it's just a very interesting statement. Like, anything, that is basic biology 101. You evolve or you become extinct. Like, I do understand what Yuri's saying. And I also understand that he's talking about, you know, I'm not going to settle in. I'm here to be champion. And I'm not, I don't have the skills and tools needed right now to deal with this threat, which is Baera. To beat him, I don't just need a better night or, you know, let's go out there and see what happens. And it's anybody's game. I need some more weapons. And that becomes, that's a very dangerous game. Like in theory, that is absolutely right. And in theory, you do want to evolve and grow. It's just it's an interesting game in practice. There is very few moves that you're ever going to use on Saturday night that you didn't learn 10 years ago. All right, you go through training camp and you're breaking down, you're studying for a guy. It's all fake. That's all for like mental. And you're going to go out there and use your skill, what it is you do best. You are not going to change from one fight to another or wait till he throws this, which he's known for, to slip outside and come with the uppercut. Like, that's all, none of that's real. So when you attempt to evolve, the first thing that traditionally happens is you leave your current situation. Whether that is you just go out and do a couple of months somewhere, or you go and join a whole new team, it's generally the beginning of the end. Like, if you ever see an MMA fighter over 28 years old switch camps, it's the beginning of the end. Not suggesting for you that's what Yuri's going to do, but if you're looking to learn some new styles, new techniques, it would seem quite obvious that that's what you're going to have to do. Now, let's talk about that. Let's talk about that exactly. I'll throw myself in there, but I had a duck under. I had a duck under. It's a move in wrestling, but if I ever needed a point, I could turn to that duck under, and I never use it unless I needed to score. It was one that I had in my back pocket, and I had a setup. I had a setup and everybody fell for it, from the national quarterfinals to the national semifinals. I got to college, and the college I went to had a different duck under. It was called a club duck. And every time I would try to drill my duck under, I'd go, oh, no, yeah, you got to do it like this. I never in my life have scored a club duck. It's a beautiful technique, by the way, but I never scored it. I didn't ever learn how to do it, and lost mine. I lost my duck. I to this day right now, don't know how I did it. I can't with the footwork because it got interrupted so many times. There's something new put in there. And I'm only suggesting for you, like, that's a very common thing. When guys go somewhere to pick up new tricks, and it's a very specific tipping point. When you're over a certain age and you go in and you start learning new tricks, you end up forgetting your original ones. And it concerns me. Now, with that said, Ian Gary went out in this fight, but see, the tipping point doesn't apply to him. He's under the age limit. He's under 28 years old. So he is able to go in the gym with, say, Damian Maia in this case, work on grappling, work on figure four in the body, controlling the back. It's just different. And it concerns me, like from a visual standpoint, Yuri's right. But Yuri does also need to understand that he is the second best guy in the division. I mean, the third best guy in that division is named Rajcik. And Yuri stopped Rajcik. Like, there's the gap. Rajcik is the third best guy, and no one can really touch him. But Yuri is the next best guy. Nobody can really touch him. And I don't know if Pierre is going to stick around. But you can't, when you lose a contest, decide that that's the time where you've got to change things. Like, you can't be outcome-based. It's a huge mistake, and the champions don't make it, but the top contenders do. If you are outcome-based as opposed to performance-based, you're really missing the number one philosophy that you need to be successful or to extend your career within this sport. Andrei Arlovsky has concluded his time with the UFC. What a career. Holy smokes. What an incredible career. There was a time win every pay-per-view. And don't forget, there was six a year. There was no mixed martial arts event, no UFC event specifically. There was no UFC that was not on pay-per-view. You could not get it. The news wasn't picking it up for a segment. There was no such thing as free TV. The expression or term streaming, digital, words didn't even exist. And every pay-per-view was going to be headlined by Tito Ortiz or Randy Couture. We just didn't know who the headline would be between Tito and Randy or who their opponent would be. And it was also a time when it was a very different time than it is now. Like, guys didn't call each other out. If you had three wins in a row and it did not matter against the opponent, there was no rankings, as a matter of fact. There wasn't even a ranking system. But if you could beat three guys in a row, you were likely fighting for the UFC championship. Adversely, if you lost three matches in a row, didn't matter how close or who they were to, your tenure at the UFC was likely up. It was just a very, very different time within our sport. And something was coming out called the WFA. And Tito was dangling a threat of the supposed promotion WFA against the UFC as a way of leveraging his contract. Like this was going on. And Randy Couture was fighting everybody that he could fight at every weight class he could fight at. But it decided that he was too old to continue on in the sport and retired. So for whatever the reasons, your two big pay-per-view attractions, and Randy Couture and Tito Ortiz, simultaneously at the same time are both gone. So what are you going to do? Well, that is probably the first time that we saw the true marketing power of the UFC. Because the biggest star in the sport overnight was a gentleman with an 8-4 record who had one slight gimmick, which is he had fangs on his mouth guard, and they called him the Pitbull. And it was awesome, by the way. Like there was nothing about it that didn't work. He was young. I didn't know a lot about him. He was very handsome. He was a good-looking heavyweight. Like, there was no fat on the bone. He looked like an oversized light heavyweight more than he fit into the stereotypical heavyweight. And he was going to have a hard time getting in his own way because they weren't doing a lot of interviews with him anyway. Put him in a tailored suit. Bring out those fangs. In fact, increase upon it. Get him a fancy car known as a Range Rover. Go to Illinois where he was living. Do some photo shoots with pit bulls that were his or borrowed for the shoot. It really didn't matter. Like, this was going to work. Oh, by the way, it did. It worked incredibly. Now, how good was he? Again, it was at a time. What difference does it make? You could be the best in the world. What difference would it make? You have no ability to prove it. There was no ranking system. So you could be the best in the world holding the belt. Or you could be a different number had there been a system in place. But now that also plays into who you're going to fight. Did your guy win his last fight? Does it make a difference? Did he win 3 out of his last 4? Did he win 7 out of his last 10? Like, what difference does it make? It was a different time. And this Orlovsky was good. Oh, he was good. In a different set of skills, and he was fun to watch. He could move his feet really well. He could move his feet. He could float around that ramp, boom, boom, and then he was very powerful. And my debut was in 2005 at the Mohegan Sun. Fought a guy named Ronaldo Babalu Sobral. And the headliner that night was Andre Orlovsky, and he was defending his title against Paul Buontello. And the rumors on Andre started to circulate, and he eventually was able to connect and tie himself to the last emperor, Fedor Emelianenko. Now, regardless of who your promoter was and regardless to your allegiance with that promoter, nobody denied that Fedor was king. Everybody with a pulse, whether you were watching the sport, writing about the sport, promoting the sport, or participating in the sport, everybody knew Fedor was out of reach. They knew he was, whether they called him champion or not, whether they had a ranking systems and put a one by him or not, they knew he was the best. But then a story started to emerge that Andre used to train with him. In fact, Andre left that gym because he knew he would never be able to outshine Fedor or even get a shot against Fedor because teammates didn't take on teammates. Now, the level of accuracy to that statement or not, I mean, that is a rumor, that is a story that has been told that withstood the powers of time and is still believed to this day. Either way, you've now found a way to take the guy known as the Pitbull and associate him with the guy who is widely viewed and accepted, unanimously viewed and accepted, as the best in the division. And it was such a great story, and it was told so incredibly well. And now you fast forward all these years later, like, as a fan, I like a guy that's out there because he's a competitor. It's not about the money. It's not about something being dangled in front of him. And isn't that easy to say? I mean, some guys don't have a choice, right? It's what they have to do. I understand that. I'm just sharing for myself. When you ask a guy, hey, what are you fighting for? And they're like, because they're still paying me. Eh, okay, there's a humor to that, but I like to know that a guy really wants to compete, that he's willing to take on anybody. He's willing to take on the big risk. This is what he enjoys doing. I don't think anybody could have ever proven that to me more than Andre. And Andre went down on Saturday, but it was a split decision. Point being, he's still very competitive. He can still go with the guys under contract, but it was the last fight on his contract. And his youthfulness simply isn't there. And Andre further down on that statement by saying, my time with the UFC is done, but my time in the sport is not. I will be taking other fights, and I am not retired. And it's a pretty cool thing. That's a pretty cool thing for a guy who's never bothered anybody. Like, no one's ever met Andre then said something bad. No one's ever called Andre Arlovsky out because they didn't like him. Nobody's been around Andre and thought that he was impolite. I mean, it has been one remarkably long and successful run. Drickus Du Plessis, what a troll. Oh my goodness, this Drickus Du Plessis has a skill. He has decided that, and he used a media opportunity for himself to book a match between Sean Strickland and Robert Whittaker. He said, you know, it just makes sense. It makes the most sense. That's a big fight. You know, you could main event that anywhere. Everybody wants to see that fight. So I know that's just how it's going to play out, and I'll respect the results and I'll respect the winner. We'll move forward from there. And, you know, I'm close. That's close to exactly what he said. It's how he said it. You should have seen the sincerity. It was as though he was making a fight announcement. Not only did he do the reverse, not only did he take two guys, okay, instead of putting them down like everybody else would have done. Oh, neither one of those. I've already beat them. I'm never giving them a rematch. I'm moving on. They don't want it bad enough. They're not as good as me. All the stuff that would have been boring and redundant and has been done before, he took it from the exact opposite approach of how awesome these guys are. What a big fight. What a main event. That's what everybody wants to see. That's what I want to see. So we'll sit back and wait till that's done. And that's just too big of a fight to interfere with. Even to give him a title fight, even to give him me for a title fight, like those two and their history and the fact that it's new and it's never been done before, you know, I might not like it. I might not like having to wait for one of them, but it's the sport. It's the right thing. And, you know, I make sure that I do the right thing here as champion. He did this all with a straight face. Oh, my goodness. Drickus Du Plessis is a troll. It was so good. You know, I've had these suspicions about him. Like, I'm at the age in my life where I can tell a handsome man. Are you with me? I got a little bit distracted, but the deal is I was watching Dreykus Duplessis. This is not the champion Dreykus Duplessis. This is press conference Dreykus Duplessis, and I was able to sit back and go, you know what? Like, there's a charm and no smile. He's got, like, very nice eyes, and he's very believable. And is he going to go good or bad, face or heel? I don't know. And the bottom line is, does he have the skills to back it up one way or the other? Probably not. Probably not. I mean, at that time, he was not a top 10 ranked guy. He was an undercard fighter. And when he did his first level of speaking up, he was speaking up against Bo Nickel. Like, I would think there couldn't be a worse matchup. But Dreykus did get his way, and he did get everything that he wanted. And it was time to go fist to cuffs. He found a way to get his hand raised. And he kept going to these press conferences in between. And all of a sudden, that nice smile, and all of a sudden, those pretty eyes, all of a sudden, he's getting more and more charming. And he's saying worse and worse things. And his ranking is going up, and his spot on the card is going up. And the words that he is using and the spite that he is creating and the animosity that is provided is going down. I think, oh my God, we have a star. We have a star if he could just fight a portion as well as he claims that he can, which he can't. Like, that wouldn't be possible. As big as he was talking, he couldn't get you 80% of the way there. Well, it turned out, old Dreykus Duplessis is the champion of the world. So now, and then he shows up. Did you guys see this? He shows up on some show. I mean, it's like The Voice here in America. It's like American Idol, or America's Got Talent. I think it is called The Voice. And he comes out and he sings, but he sings underneath a mask. They reveal the mask. It's Dreykus Duplessis. And wouldn't you know, the guy's got a voice of an angel. Like, anything that you would think or suspect about this guy is not true. Oh, and by the way, when I told you he's only got to be a fraction of as good as he's claimed to be, I mean, this is excellent work right here. If there's anything that Sean Strickland does not want, it's to fight Robert Whittaker for a contenders match. Sean will fight him twice if one of them's got the belt. It's not the fight he doesn't want. He doesn't want to fight Robert Whittaker in a contenders match. He doesn't want to fight anybody in a contenders match. He has proven that he is the contender. In fact, the number one contender, and he has. That is all true, but that's not totally how this sport works. So Dreykus, who has legitimate heat and beef with Sean to some degree, as a way of sticking it to Sean, has just announced how wonderful, how undeniably wonderful, and what a huge gate and box office draw it would be to get Sean and Whittaker together. And even though he's the champion, and even though he has the power to step in front of that and anoint one of them now, he won't. He will follow the rules of the game and adhere to the integrity of the sport as Sean Strickland takes on Robert Whittaker. What is it you're trying to chime in with?
Wasn't Robert Whittaker going to fight Michael Bisping?
Robert Whittaker versus Michael Bisping, was that supposed to happen? I mean, you're going back many, many years, but I don't remember that, no.
I'm sorry. I hit you.
That's all right. All right. Champ's getting his boxing gloves on, what likely means he's going to get me a pair, which likely means I got to go because I'm probably going to find myself in a little sparring session. Happy day to you all. All right, guys, that's it for today's episode. Thank you for listening. And I want to remind you that if you enjoyed this episode, please go over to Apple Podcasts and leave me a review. You can also submit a 5-star rating over on my Spotify feed. I'm going to be back for more on Tuesday. Enjoy the weekend. And until next week, I am Chael Sonnen, and you are welcome.